Hello, welcome to episode 46 of the Extra Sequential Podcast, hosted out of Perth, Western Australia. My name's Mladen.
Yeah, you sound like you work in a men's fashion shop, like from one of those 70s. Hello. Are you being served? Well, hello!
Mr. Humphreys. Yes.
Yeah. My name's Chris, and we're going to be talking about comics and stuff.
Yeah. This week's show, we're going to be reviewing two brand newies. The first one's called Liar's Kiss, and the other one's called Homeland Directive. Did I get that one right?
Yes, but Homeland Directive doesn't end with a question mark. But other than that, it's correct. They're both from Top Shelf. Both OGNs, original graphic novels that have just been released. So we'll be talking both of those in depth. And but before that, there's a whole bunch of news stuff to talk about.
Damn right. Well. Mm. And meanwhile, during the show, if you hear me eating almonds, that's just part of the entertainment, folks.
Oh, I just bought myself this week some almond M&Ms, and I liked them. And I think they may have eclipsed my peanut M&Ms, which were my previous favourite.
I can see that. I mean, almond M&Ms are basically like wedding sweets, you know, shot candy-coated almonds.
Would you really give M&Ms at your wedding?
If they were white, then you can say they're wedding sweets. See? So it works. Anything if it's white. White licorice, that would be appropriate. Hey, so out of the news items, you and I both saw this one, and it's quite sad news. Gene Colan just passed away.
Yeah, Gene Colan died at the age of 84. Obviously, he's been having problems for a while now. He's worked in the Silver Age. Most people would be familiar with his work. He's an artist, mainly did a lot of work for Marvel in the 70s, 80s, such as Doctor Strange, Daredevil, and Tomb of Dracula. Those two in particular he's really famous for.
Yeah.
He's got a really fluid kind of, I mean, it's hard to describe, but if you Google his name, you'll obviously see his artwork. He also co-created Blade,
Vampire Hunter. I mean, he's worked on most of the core superheroes for DC and Marvel. I've got Howard the Duck here as well, and also Detective Comics Batman, and Captain America comic with Ed Brubaker more recently, which is award-winning. Yes. So,
2009, which is his last major work in the comics field, and that actually won, as you said, the Eisner Award for Best Single Issue that year, so in 2009. So, it's a sad situation, so... But, you know, the good thing about the comic industry is these wonderful writers and artists always get acclaim during their lifetime. Like, it always annoys me when actors or sportsmen die and then all these people came out of the woodwork saying all these wonderful things about them. I think it's too late.
Yeah, Elton John changes two words out of one of his famous songs and, you know, it's a tribute to them now, you know.
Yes. So
maybe he'll write one about Gene Colan. That'd he was like a candle in something.
Yes. Commando Comics turns 50. So they've been publishing four black and white issues every fortnight. They went digital about 2 months ago. So they'd be reprinting the first 12 issues from their 1961 debut, which is the first year they debuted. Commando Comics, most people would be familiar with them. I never really got into them, but I do remember seeing them at the secondhand bookstore when I first fell in love with comics. So they're the kind of square-bound black and white. They're kind of like the Phantom comics. You kind of see them everywhere. And I didn't realize this, but they've also had editions published in India, in Hindi, and also in Finland. So you would have read a few Commando comics.
I'm almost certain I have. It's one of those ones where you can
Daring Do and such.
Yeah, you can usually get a stack of them for 50 cent sets at anyone's garage sale. It's it's like Tom Clancy novels and Stephen King novels. Everyone has a few of them somewhere around. You know, and that's Commando Comics. Congratulations for 50 years, guys.
Very well. They're still going strong, so you can check out commandocomics.com to see what their latest and greatest is. So, if you remember them from your youth, yes, they're still around.
Fantastic. I had a piece here, and it's just more of an interesting quote I liked. Obviously, all the news items in the last couple of weeks have been focused on one freaking thing, the DC relaunch. And I think the energy is just starting to die off. Now, people are, the stamina level has died down. Read an interesting interview with Gary Groff from Fantagraphics over at CBR, Comic Book Resources, and they asked him about what he thought about the DC relaunch, and I'll just read out what he says here, swearing and all, so children cover your ears. It seems like a pitiful attempt to con more people into buying the same old shit. I probably shouldn't be so cynical. I'm sure that some brilliant talent could breathe some life into this stuff. Like I said, I'm not one to talk. It just seems so completely uninteresting to me. And in a way, it's idiomatically alien to me. And yeah, he goes on and says it's too frenetic and manga influenced, which I can see what he means. But yeah, it was interesting how he said it's just another, it's a way of them to get you to buy the same comic. Because really, not a lot's changed besides the outfits.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's basically just this is the biggest push the DC have done to get new readers. They haven't done something on this for a long, long time.
Yeah.
I think up in Newsarama this week, there was a list of the top 10 superhero relaunches done in the last, like, 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
Every publisher has done it at some point in time. My first reaction was, like, that's outrageous. I won't stand for a DC fan for my whole life. But
truly outrageous.
Yeah, but it's not like this is the first time this has happened. It's just on this scale is quite remarkable. It's very bold.
Yeah, but it's interesting how they've kept mostly the same writing talents involved.
Yeah,
as
like the Batman and Green Lantern books aren't really changing much at all because they're actually selling.
That's right.
It's just the lower tier titles that are kind of getting a bit of a shake up.
A bit of a shuffle between writers, like someone will go off that book and onto this book, but really it's the same kind of core group of writers they've had for a while.
Yeah, so, a bit of musical chairs going on.
Yeah, so it's interesting if the comics will be any different in terms of, I don't know, less over-the-top violence porn.
We'll find out in September.
All right. Any other
Powers. Powers. This is something that I've never, one of those classic comic runs that recently finished, I think, that never, it's created, owned comic by Brian Michael Bendis, who does a lot of Marvel stuff. He basically wrote Ultimate Spider-Man and Avengers, and he does so many titles, and Michael Avon Oeming. So the two of those guys created this comic called Powers, and now it's turning into a TV show. So basically the central premise of Powers is pretty interesting. It's basically these two kind of cops in a city where supers, as in superpowered individuals, are quite common. So it's almost like a CSI meets Astro City, I guess. Kind of thing.
All right. Okay.
So you've never read any of Powers comics?
I've never read any. I'm only vaguely familiar with the title, so you have to bear with my ignorance.
So Lucy Punch, actress who Good you might name. Remember from Dinner for Schmucks, if you've seen her film, it's not that great.
Yeah, but I like her name. That's good.
The French original, which is probably better. She's been cast as Dina Pilgrim and Jason Patrick from The Losers. And what's that vampire movie with Kiefer Sutherland in? Lost Boys. Lost Boys. And Speed 2 with Sandra Bullock.
Oh, was he the Keanu Reeves replacement?
He was indeed.
Oh, wow.
So
he played a detective in that as well. I think they assumed they would have Keanu for that film.
He probably didn't want to do sequels, even though he's doing a third Bill and Ted.
Well, that's. I wonder if they're just trying to drum up some controversy or something there. I just can't see it happening.
50-year-old villains' heads.
De-aging technology. The technology they used on Magneto and Professor X in X-Men 3 to de-age them, you know.
Yes, possible.
Wrinkle removal. Although Keanu Reeves looks about 16 still, so.
Yeah, him and Johnny Depp, they're going all right, aren't they?
Well, Johnny Depp just covers it up with goatees. Like, it's cheating, you know. He stacks on the pounds and wrinkles, but he grows like a goatee to hide them. So, yeah, clever guy. Keanu has to just deal with it, you know? You don't know what I mean.
No. Robin. What? Robin is going to be a playable character in Batman Arkham City, which is the sequel to Arkham Asylum. Mm-hmm. So that game comes out on October 18th this year. We know Batman is obviously a playable character, the main one, as is Catwoman.
Spoilers.
Yes. What a plague is Batman? His name's in the title.
Yeah.
So for now, it's only available through Best Buy, which is, I guess, some kind of retail.
It's like Target, I think, for them. Yeah.
So you can, if you buy it through them, you get Robin as a playable character, as a downloadable content, plus a couple of extra maps.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is they've just released the first like black and white image of him. And again, we'll put images on the site. But it's actually Tim Drake, who's the third Robin, not Dick Grayson. Whenever they do Robin out of the comics, like in the films or the TV shows or cartoons, it's always Dick Grayson who was the first Robin. So it's good to see that this is actually Tim Drake that's playable. So that's
yeah.
I'm happy Tim's getting his due, man. Go Tim. He was like, you know, he came on in the 90s. He was a big computer nerd. He discovered that Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson were Batman and Robin, respectively. And they said, you're so smart. Why don't you come along and be the next Robin? And he said, cool, I'm down with that.
And he has a trendy new do in this. He's got the same generic cropped hair that all the other...
But he doesn't have a diamond earring like Chris O'Donnell did in Batman and Robin.
Are you sure? Diamante earring? Because he's fearless. I'm not afraid of piercings.
A couple more news items. The Captain America trailer has just debuted. So the second trailer has debuted. Yeah, which has a lot more action and a bit of laughs. It actually looks pretty good. So you see Captain America, Red Skull, all that kind of stuff. And Chris Evans' kind of bobblehead body doesn't look as weird.
I didn't think it. Well, yes, I saw a trailer for it blown up on the big screen in front of Super 8, and I thought, wow. I was watching it with my girlfriend. I wanted to see if she'd notice if it was Chris Evans, because they did a pretty damn good job making him look like a skinny dweeb. So I think it plays well on the big screen as well as on the little computer trailer screen.
You know what I mean? Yes. Yeah. So the film opens on July 22, Captain America, the First Avenger. A new poster has been released as well.
Mm.
Lastly, Gestalt, our friends at Gestalt Comics, local Perth publishing house, they're actually got a documentary about them. So the documentary is done with Screen West, which is our local government-funded body. So they're and they've got a film crew following them at Supernova, the convention, and Comic-Con this year, which is happening in July. So and you might have noticed if you look at previews, I think it's page 290, they've actually got four OGN's original graphic novels coming out in August, including The Deep by Tom Taylor. So there's some pretty good ones there. So Gestalt, it's very encouraging to see kind of Aussies making it big on the international scene, not only in Hollywood but also in comics.
I've got to say, this is bittersweet news, Chris. Bittersweet.
Why?
Why won't someone make a documentary about us?
Well,
Perth's longest-running comics podcast.
That's true. Maybe once we hit triple digits.
Yeah, then we'll be famous enough. That would be such a boring documentary.
Well, I think we could make it funny. We could wear funny clothes.
We could drum up some conflict.
Just put lines from Big Bang Theory.
Do you want to try and paint it like Siskel and Ebert style, like we just don't get along in real life and we're giving each other crap all the time?
I think more like Margaret and David.
Really? I'm David.
The movies.
You're Margaret.
I so am.
See, I'm the classier one.
What's that movie which was like a real life Spinal Tap about that Canadian heavy metal band that's kind of I can't remember the name of it,
neither can
but it's very funny, and they like it's real life and it follows these basically two best mates who aren't making it big, and then they played like some band in Bulgaria, but because they were late the manager paid them in bowls of soup. And that has all this weird stuff happening. That would be like us.
The difference between them and us is they're talented and they can play the instruments.
Have you got yourself a beverage?
I have like a...
West Talent.
To chew on. These almonds are drying my mouth out. I don't know how I'm going to get
these there. Almonds are making me thirsty.
They're making me thirsty, Jerry. Okay, well, I'll force my way through. I'll be like Jean-Claude Van Damme in Legionnaire.
Oh, yes.
Legionary or whatever. Legionnaire.
No, it's called Legionnaire. That's what I was called. When he was in the French Legion?
That's the one, yeah. Was he convicted for a crime he didn't commit?
Yes, him and Seagal both. And Nicolas Cage and Con Air also suffered from the same affliction.
He's amazing. Except he doesn't have any kung fu abilities or anything. Of course, neither does Steven Seagal, but that hasn't stopped him.
No, it's true. I watched Green Hornet with Seth Rogen and Jay Chu. I think this is his first film where he plays Kato.
He's like a Korean pop star or something?
Yeah, Korean or Taiwanese. One of the non-Australian places. It was okay. I did enjoy it. But I knew that filmmaker Kevin Smith, who's written a few comics in his day, Daredevil, Green Arrow, and whatnot, Spider-Man, he wrote a comic script for this, like, in the late 90s.
Right.
And been trying to get made for ages and ages. Nicolas Cage was originally cast as one of the bad guys. George Clooney was going to be in at one stage. And his version of the film never got made, but Dynamite Entertainment turned it into a comic.
How was that comic?
Finished. Yeah, it was good, actually. It was really good. And it's quite different. It was a lot more ambitious than this version that we got, directed by, the French guy.
What's that Batman comic Kevin Smith wrote where Batman wets his pants?
The Widening Guy.
That's the one.
Yeah. Or he talked, I don't know if he wets his pants.
He wets his pants.
Something about emptying his bladder because someone punched him in his bladder or something like
He's like recapping that famous scene in A Year One where he's threatening all the mobsters with like, he said, you've dined on the feast of Gotham for long enough. Tonight your feast ends. And then he puts the lid down on the thing and it kind of explodes. And then he says he lit it too hard, so it made him wet his pants or something like that. I'm like, Kevin Smith, not only did you write a comic where Batman wets his pants, you ruined a really amazing comic for me. Yes.
Yeah. Well, Year One's is the next DC animated feature film, actually. So, and from the art that they've released online, it looks pretty good, pretty close to the original. Yeah,
you know, I tried watching a trailer for that, and it's blocked in Australia.
Yeah, I know. As did I.
Douchey.
It's not a trailer. It's a like behind the scenes feature kind of thing. But I think it's actually on a Green Lantern Emerald Knights Blu-ray, which I have ordered. So. I will recap it when I watch it. But yeah, Green Hornet wasn't bad. But it had Anvil. Anvil is the band that I was talking about, the real last Spinal Tap, the Canadian heavy metal. And they were actually playing in a bar in one of the scenes. And I'm like, oh, no, those guys.
Michel Gondry must be a fan.
Michel Gondry, that's the French guy.
Who directed it?
Quite possibly. They're doing well for themselves these days, Anvil.
All right. Hey,
That's all I've been doing.
We were meant to talk about something on today's show.
Zebras.
Feature reviews of something?
Yeah, sure, let's do it.
Yeah, all right.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Liars, Kiffs, and those two words on the title pretty much tell you everything you need to know about this book. Right. So there's a bit of deceit and a bit of sexy, naughty time going on.
Beautifully summed up.
That sounds like Borat was reviewing comics.
It's actually, yeah.
It's written by Eric Skillman, who it's his first OGN, and basically his day job is designing covers and such for the Criterion Collection, who do a lot of kind of classic films on DVDs and stuff.
Yeah.
And his blog, I don't know if you looked at it, Aladdin, but his blog, Cozy Lummox, LUMMOX, it's really good. Like he's got such a good eye. Just for designing and stuff and seeing all these kind of old sci-fi and noir thriller murder mystery films kind of given a new life. And yeah, it's really good. So check out his blog if you're interested in art or design or any of that kind of stuff.
Right.
So yeah, he's the writer. The art is by,
Jomar Soriano. He's a Philippines-based illustrator. He's previously worked on Mr. Greaves and Arkham Woods. Those are for Seven Seas Entertainment, but previously he seems to be predominantly kind of in the manga field or the manhwa field, which is like Korean kind of influenced manga, which has a slightly different feel. And I suppose we should just summarize what the book's about. It's kind of like a neo-crime noir book. He starts off by kind of inverting the trope of the private investigator, where the woman he's investigating is actually the woman he's having the affair with, that his client has tried to hide him to find out about. So as soon as it gets going, you're like, okay, they're doing the noir thing and they're going to try and spin it on his head. And, her husband's killed, but her alibi puts her inheritance at risk, you know, so the PI ends up investigating while the police are investigating her, and there's a web involving art dealing and various surly characters, dodgy detectives who beat him up in the middle of the street, which I thought, hey, you can't do that. I guess we can – the look of the thing's done in this black and white, you know, dark chiaroscuro look, you know, harsh blacks.
Yeah, I must say I did quite enjoy this quite a lot. Yeah. It's kind of, Alfred Hitchcock is my favourite director, and this kind of reminded me almost of a lost Alfred Hitchcock film. It's got that kind of vibe about it, and it's kind of the films that they don't really make anymore. I kind of found it a very cinematic approach. I'd imagine that Skillman, the writer, being a designer himself, must have worked quite closely with Jomar Soriano in regards to kind of how he wanted the pages to look and stuff. Like even the the credits page.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this kind of The Liar's Kiss, just credits are like big, bold, white, mm-hmm. and then it's got little close-ups of kind of sexiness happening. So you've got a close-up of breasts and, you know, the biting down on her bottom lip and all that kind of stuff. And it looks very cinematic. It almost looks like a kind of lost kind of film. And it's broken down into chapters, and each chapter has got like a little quote. Just it's just white text on black. It's designed as a very cinematic book, almost like the credits page to a film kind of thing.
Well, that opening panel reminds me of Rear Window. Where he's holding that enormous telescope lens camera, and the opening panel of this has that, so I definitely see the Hitchcock element there. Like the art here is, I mean, we're talking harsh blacks and whites, and one of the first things that obviously pops into a lot of people's heads would be Sin City, but I'd say this is more like black and white work of Kent Williams or Eduardo Risso.
Yeah, Eduardo Risso, who does 100 Bullets. And he's done some Batman work as well. That's the first name that kind of sprang to mind as well. It's got a very kind of crisp and light touch. Like there's actually in some panels there's very few lines, and there's not really busy backgrounds and stuff.
It's very well balanced, the black and white. It's not too heavy like in a Miller work.
Yeah, it's not like just thrown on everywhere. Yes. Like there's not enough black on this page. But it's like even just the creases on the bed sheets and the crinkle on the wrinkle on the clothes and all that kind of. It's done very well, and I'm just flicking through the pages again now, and I just one thing that did stood out to me when I read it was there's a lot of kind of alternation between close-ups, you know, the eyes and stuff, and then overhead shots, the body language, again, to reiterate the point, it's all very cinematic, and you've got the, like you said before, you've got the noir tropes, so like the blinds, you know, kind of. they always use, and then the ceiling fan, looking down over the ceiling fan, and the, you know, the stuffy kind of messy private eye kind of life in his little office.
It's a little incongruous, isn't it? Because it's actually set in the modern day, and he's dressed up in the PI look. His office is like an old PI's office. It's like he digs the aesthetic, and they never even address it. And there's even a flashback to before he's a PI, and he's still dressed that way. So it must just be his thing.
It's his favourite suit. That's very true, actually. And like you said, there are flashbacks which are done in kind of a, I don't think that's a watercolour necessarily, but an ink wash style, and no kind of noir detective thriller is complete without some kind of flashbacks as to the seediness of characters and why they're motivated to do the nasty things that they're doing. And I thought that was quite a good way of doing it as well. The flashbacks are all in this kind of black and white ink wash kind of watercolory kind of style, which kind of adds to the grittiness and grime and the mood of the overall piece as well.
I like it also sets a little bit of doubt on, because it is like they're telling him what they're saying has happened, or what their version of events are.
So it is true.
Yes, it's not the literal black and white truth. It's all shades of grey.
Ah, yes.
See what I did there? Yeah.
Yes, you must have went to art school. I really felt that it was quite well written.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, so basically, as you're saying, Johnny Kincaid, who's the main, well, he's not really the main guy, but he's the dead guy. You've got Abby Kincaid, who's his wife. She finds her husband dead.
Yep.
So she's kind of caught in this rock and a hard place where she's sleeping with Nick Archer, who's the PI, but she can't really use that as her alibi because, if she does, then she doesn't get anything from her husband's will. So she's kind of, you know, what does she do exactly? And then eventually, as the story continues, we learn that Johnny Kincaid's first wife, Evelyn, had an art gallery, which is kind of like a pet project of hers, because her art was so bad that no galleries wanted to buy her paintings. So the rich husband made her our own gallery and said, here you go, honey, put it all in here. And then the whole kind of tale kind of hinges on what happens on that gallery one fateful night.
Mm-hmm.
Web of intrigue goes on. We can't
There is a twist ending to this. We won't spoil it.
How did you feel about that twist?
Part of me felt it didn't really, but the particular twist that happens in this one didn't really feel like it belonged to the genre, and it kind of comes out of nowhere.
It kind of felt a bit almost a tad too convenient.
It breaks the rules almost. The rules in these things are, you know, you're given the clues and you should hopefully have enough information or noticed all the subtle things to pick it up. But I think the twist it takes, it would be pretty impossible to guess because it's not something that you would ever expect in this kind of... It's not a robot or anything like that. Don't worry. It's still a pretty organic thing if people are interested. But it'll definitely... well, I guess these things need a twist, and it's becoming harder and harder to surprise people, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It wasn't so much of a... that it doesn't shatter what you've read before. It doesn't make you enjoy the book any less. But, yeah, you're right in that you're kind of turning the pages and reading all about these characters. And there's not a lot of characters there. There's, three or four main characters, and you'll learn a bit about more of them, and they all have their moment to shine. Mm-hmm. But by the time you get to the end of it, you're like, interesting. It doesn't really work as to what I would believed it would have led me to. But nonetheless, it is a very enjoyable book, and especially – you know, writing, 120-page book for a first-timer and something in a genre that we have seen a lot of before. I think he puts enough new things in it that it works quite well. And I really like the dialogue for that. Apart from the art, the standout for me was the dialogue. It's quite adult, you know. We've mentioned the sexiness already, and there's a fair bit of profanity. These are all kind of hard-edged characters. And they kind of speak their mind quite a lot. And there's some violence in there as well, but never really over the top. No. But yeah, I really felt the dialogue was really good. Like, I felt like, again, I'm going to go back to that cinematic thing, but I really did feel that the dialogue was almost like something I could see in a screenplay being made. Did you feel that way?
Yeah, I quite enjoyed, I guess everyone had their own voice, which helped a lot.
Yes.
And it was this weird kind of, no one was talking about dames and damsels or anything, so that was kind of refreshing. It's not like I'm completely drawing a blank. There's this movie where I'm completely drawing a blank on who's in it.
Who's in it?
That's the problem. I can't even place it. The guy from
Where was it made?
The guy from Okay, let me help you out here. The guy from Inception who runs around in the hallways. He's in it. It's basically set in an LA high school, and then they having Brick. Thank you. See, now, and I can probably even remember who directed it now if I think about it. Ryan Johnson. There you go.
Johnson? That doesn't sound right.
No, that doesn't sound right either. Who is it? But that was set in like a modern day setting, and everyone spoke in detective speak, like about dames and stiffs, and it was all kind of old-timey, and they avoid that here, and it just has a different effect. So there's no annoying streetwise slang talking characters, which always pulls me out of a novel.
Yes,
but yeah, otherwise I quite enjoyed the dialogue.
It was directed by Ryan Johnson. And films draws especially from Des Hure Hamlet. And it's got Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
See, why couldn't I remember
from
any
of
that?
From Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah. And 500 Days of Summer, which is a better thing to, But with the art here, the thing that occurred to me, it took me a while, like I had to really rack my brain to remember what it was. You might be familiar with the work of Jim Steranko.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. He drew, illustrated kind of like a first modern graphic novel back in 76 called Red Tide, which is like an illustrated Raymond Chandler novel.
Okay.
And that's also a private investigator, and he has to solve a crime within 48 hours. But there's panels in this which directly draw on that style of the heavy black and white inks. And Miller uses that one as an inspiration as well. But I think this is, for fans of that work and that old-timey attention to detail and attention to illustration, I think you might really enjoy this. And for me, I could really pick up on the manga influences. I don't know about you.
Really? I didn't get any of that.
I could see
it
on the character faces.
I wouldn't have sensed that he was a manga artist by looking at this.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I think it's the more kind of low-key manga, especially in some of the characters' faces. They don't have big bug eyes, but they do have that V chin.
Yes, there are a lot of pointy chins.
No, it's not distracting. It's only if you know what you're looking for, you'll see it. That's all. Otherwise, yeah, this gets a reasonable thumbs up and recommendation from me.
Yes, and also for me, Lies Kiss, top shelf, available at your local book and comic outlets now.
Right. The other book that we both read this week, some sooner than others, I heard Chris only just put this down, so you should have some very fresh thoughts in your mind. Some
thoughts
fresh...
are as fresh as the daisies in my garden.
All right.
I don't have daisies in my garden.
That was poor, Chris. That was poor.
Sorry. Apologies to daisy enthusiasts everywhere.
Right. This book is called The Homeland Directive No, no question mark. by Robert Vendetti and Mike Huddleston. If one of those names sounds vaguely familiar, the artist on this book is also the artist on Surrogates. Not the best.
The writer, you mean.
Oh, the writer? How do I mix that
up? Robert Venditti wrote The Surrogates, also Percy Jackson and Olympians. Mike Huddleston is the artist. Mm. He did The Coffin, which is on my massive mound of books that I own but have yet to read. And he's also doing Butcher Baker, The Righteous Maker, which is a quite over-the-top series from Image at the moment. And again, much like The Liar's Kiss, the art is kind of stays with you. It's a lot more in your face, I guess. Whereas this is a bit more subtle and standard.
Yes.
I don't use that word. Whereas Huddleston's work here is like an orgy for your cavities.
It is kind of like throw everything on there and see what sticks, isn't it? A little bit.
But the beauty is that everything sticks. I was very impressed with this. I mean, I think if you flick through it initially, if you're epileptic, you're probably going to, have issues. But as you read it slowly as an actual book, it stands out really well. Yeah. And, I really liked this.
It balances the black and white and then beige washes and a few brighter colours here and there. And we don't want to paint it as being some garish mess. It's just very...
It's quite a superb mix of styles, really. Right. It never gets unwieldy or kind of show-offy, like, I'm going to use every trick in Photoshop. It's like in the hospital, there's scenes in the hospital which are kind of black and white with hints of blue, and then New York scenes are like a collage of colours and lights and activity.
I don't want to get too far into the art before we tell people what this book is.
What's it about?
It's a political thriller in the kind of vein of, say, Enemy of the State, but less action-y. If that helps, or kind of Jeffrey Archer novels or something. Like an immunologist, or she's like a virus researcher, she's targeted for elimination by the Department of Homeland Security. And she's then protected, taken under the wing of a small group of rogue FBI agents who suspect that there's something more afoot than just the original suspicion of these trumped up suspicions on her. And, it all leads up to this conspiracy that the department's so worried about outside threats and the country's lack of vigilance that it manufactures a biological attack on itself. But it's more complicated than that.
It's good when we won't spoil how that...
No, that's pretty ingenious.
How it gets passed on. But yeah, I thought that was a really good twist.
There's a way they spread the disease, which is, I don't think I've seen this used anywhere else, but it's perfect because it ties in exactly... When you hear how the disease is spread, you're like, that actually makes sense for a government that wants to have further vigilance on the people.
Yes.
And it's very clever. It's hard to go too deep into the plot on this kind of story because a lot of the joy in it is uncovering. And I find this one in particular is very well paced with each sort of quarter of the book. There's like a sort of turn and you find out something else that makes these other parts make sense and it unravels in a satisfying way. So you're pulled along very neatly. I read this in one sitting, without pauses because it was quite engaging. Whereas Liar's Kiss, I found I could put it down and come back to it. Whereas this kind of is paced really well and that comes down to Robert Vendetti's, experience as a writer.
Yeah, and there's a lot, it touches on a lot, and it's quite a layered book. It's a bit like a lasagna, it's got layer upon layer. So it touches on politics and medicine and
conspiracy kind of lasagna.
Conspiracy, and so I think, if you hate the government, you might like this book. But it doesn't, it's not a cynical book. It never comes across as kind of jaded or anything, but it does come across as quite real. And again, I guess like Liar's Kiss, you could quite easily see this be turned into a film.
That's no
problem with that. But it's quite a talky book, whereas kind of the dialogue in Liar's Kiss is quite charming and witty and kind of says a lot about the characters. There's a fair bit of exposition, a lot of explanation that needs to go on in Homeland Directive.
Very
especially
plotty.
For people like us, But it's done in a really good way. Like it's all done simply through dialogue. Again, like Liar's Kiss, there's no God voice telling us what the characters think and whatnot. So it's all done simply by dialogue. And, the Doctor, Laura Regan, who's kind of the everyman or every woman, kind of gets pulled into this.
Yeah.
On her way to give a speech in New York. Yeah, she's followed by a couple of people, and then they kidnap her research partner, and he ends up being killed, and she's blamed for it. So all this kind of stuff, and she's like, what's going on? Those rogue FBI agents, and from other agencies as well, kind of tell her what's going on. But it's good those rogue agents aren't like those, what are those guys from the X-Files? Remember they had their own spin-off show for a while?
Oh, the three something.
Egos? That's the ones.
Chevy Chase, Steve Martin, and Martin Short. Martin Sheen.
They're not geeky, or they're not like stereotypes. They're just kind of, you know what I mean, there's like a bit of a fat nerdy guy with glasses. But they're all like, they're well-made characters. I felt Laura Regan, who's the main character in this, she wasn't an entirely sympathetic character. Not that I hated her by stretch of imagination, but we didn't really know that much about her. She just kind of gets thrown into this, a couple of pages into the story.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because for me, I thought a lot of the characters, because the story is very plotty and there's a lot going on in terms of the information that they need to say to convey to you what's going on, a lot of the characters don't matter as much as, in terms of a character, as much as what they represent. So as long as you understand what she does and what her work is, as a main character, I thought, okay, I don't really get a sense of, what's going on in her head at any real point. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So she was a little bit underdeveloped, but in this kind of story, I don't think it's necessary almost. And with the minor characters like the FBI agents who help her out,
besides, the Lone Gunman. That's the
Lone Gunman. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. They, once you get the feeling, okay, he's the gruff one. He's the kind of competent, but kind of, inexperienced one, or, those kind of things. You get the feeling there. And the villain of the piece, is a bald headed suit wearing hitman type.
Yes.
Which I am so sick of seeing.
It doesn't have a barcode on the back of his head, though, like the
That's right.
Hitman video game character.
Once, I want to see a hitman who has like shoulder length hair, wearing like a casual polo shirt and shorts and thongs or something.
What's that guy, Conair? He was in that Hitman movie where he goes to his high school reunion. Minnie Driver was in it. Wasn't he a hitman? He's not your typical looking hitman.
Hitman movie where he goes to his high school.
We're not very good with movies.
Was it Brick?
I don't still know.
All right.
I really did quite enjoy this. I thought that it mixed the kind of the long dialogue quite bits with quite a lot of action. Like there's a little fair bit of silent kind of action that kind of happens. And there's some really good horizontal scenes. I don't know if those jumped out to you as much as they did with me, but there's a couple of horizontal kind of pages that are, the panels are kind of organized.
Oh, like double page.
Yeah. And I thought those were done really well.
Struck me as well, because normally with double pages, I quite struggle to know whether it's intentional or whether they actually want me to read down each page. Whereas in this one, it's quite clear. Okay, I read across here, and that's just in the way the panels are set out, and it's effective. Whereas normally it stops me in my tracks, and it takes me a second to go, do they want me to go here or there? It's pretty understandable what you're meant to do. So it's instinctive in that way. And
they were really designed. Like two in particular, there was one where there's a scientist who's a friend of Laura. He kind of shows up at the start and right again at the end, and he's looking through a microscope. And then, kind of in the background, you see kind of medical diagrams and stuff, like just kind of floating around in the background, just visual motifs. And then there's another one where the hitman guy is kind of breaking into a hotel room and there's guns firing, and those kind of horizontal pages work really well.
Yeah, that's right.
And just Huddleston's art, besides all the colours and the quite bold, but it works so well. There's some sketchy elements as well, like where like faces or bodies will kind of sketch outside of the borders of the panels.
Sure.
So it's not like a rigid kind of thing. It kind of reminded me of the Last Days of American Crime, which was one of my favorite books from last year from Radical Publishing, and Greg Zucchini, who's the artist on that, and he had a kind of a similar style where it's kind of half pencil, half painty kind of thing, where he did it all the work himself. It's got kind of Benday dots, duotone kind of. As a couple of non-artists, it's hard to describe what's going on. But it's I think both of these books Luke talks about are ones that you could easily hand to a non-comics reading buddy. And they'd kind of like them both, hopefully.
Yeah.
John Cusack, Gross Point Blank.
Okay.
Where's he been?
Okay, right. Yeah, with the art, I mean, yeah, we mentioned the different palettes, and he uses it to quickly shift between scenes and between different characters in a scene, and you get a sense of the geography of where people are at any given time because of that colouring they use. And it's not as strict as when you're in the Matrix, everything's green, and when you're outside the Matrix, everything's blue. You know, it's not like that. But, yeah, and with another thing with the art here is a lot of panels, and particularly cars and cityscapes, are created from photo collage. They're not drawn, which isn't jarring since he also kind of desaturates them, and he does it frequently enough that it's not just a lazy choice. It adds a touch of realism to the setting and a bit of familiarity and reality, because you're meant to be able to feel this could happen, you know, even though it's a little bit outlandish. And I still don't think having had a little bit of experience with government employees, I don't believe they'd be so organized and airtight to create this vast and potentially disastrous conspiracy. Yeah.
But well, true, but you know.
It ties into our kind of everyone's fear of loss of liberty and all that stuff, and it into that paranoia of the conspiracy theorist and the non-conspiracy theorist, you know, that underlying fear of, well, what if, you know, if these people aren't on our side, or if they make, you know, and they're making these decisions we don't want them to make. But, yeah, there's a lot in this, and I think
there is a lot of this. You kind of need to focus as you're reading it. It's not a he's the bad guy, he's the good guy, and they were gonna have a fist fight at the end. It's a lot more layered and complex than that. But it never becomes never becomes show offy, or never becomes, hey, I've got a, you know, degree in journalism and, you know, social political science, so let me show off.
Yeah, there aren't any long tirades or anything, are there? Yeah.
No, and there's not, you know, lists and lists of facts and or whatever.
Yeah, it's really structured organically, and there's
you won't feel depressed after reading it
or confused, which is the main problem with these kind of political thrillers, getting lost at that halfway point, like, wait, I thought that guy was there's none of that in this. It's well handled. So if you're out for this kind of political thriller, this is a pretty good one.
Yes, Homeland Directive by Robert Venditti and Mike Huddleston, available now from your comic shop.
Sorry, I'm chewing almonds and my mouth is so dry. I feel like a $2 hooker. So dry.
Really? Is that what happens? I have to give you
$2. I might have to edit that out. Okay.
Okay, very good. Classic favor. Okay, so that was a couple of looks at some good top shelf books. And we hope to do more. Because we don't really do that much, Mladen. We read the same books.
No.
Usually.
Yeah.
Because we're just so different, man. We're like, you're like the Red Lantern and I'm like the Green, and we'll never agree with one another.
Which is the one with the seedy mustache?
That would be Sinestro. So he's the Yellow Lantern of Fear.
That's you. That's you in Movember.
Yes, good point. We should point out that Movember happens in November, the month we grow our mustache, Chad. I think it's an Australian only thing, isn't it?
Is it? Wow. See, we're the only charitable nation among nations. Okay, well, we didn't explain that. You grow a mustache for charity, okay? That's what it is, people, okay? I don't want to get emails of people going, what the hell is wrong with you guys? What is a Movember? Yeah, now you know, okay? Jeez.
Well, you've got a beard at the moment, haven't you? You've been hairy for quite some time.
It's more like a stubble. The best birthday gift I've ever gotten is from my beloved Shelley. She got me a beard trimmer.
So I
can have a permanent 1 millimeter stubble.
I'm actually going to have a haircut tomorrow.
You should get a stubble.
Well, I look quite good when I'm bald. I'm not balding, which is already happening, but bald.
Get like a Starkiller, infamous Batman, Rob, you know, the guy from the new Star Wars games.
Yes.
And Robin from Arkham City. Get that haircut.
I might see if I can match it with that Chris O'Donnell diamond earring.
And then take up parkour.
I'm 35. I don't have health insurance. So what are we talking about next week, Mr. Lukerton?
Well, we figure we're going to tell you what to order and what not to order from this month's previews.
I'm not going to tell you. We're not running a communist nation. We're going to recommend, and you can either choose to ignore us or bow to our superior wisdom.
Hey, we're not going to force ourselves onto you, man, but I figure if you're listening, you better do what we say. And we'll also be filling in with what we've been reading this month.
You might notice we've been changing the format, I suppose, over the last couple of weeks, just because we realised that our rambling episodes have become too ramblonic.
Is there such a thing?
It means similar to Rambo. Sounds like the drugs that he takes to keep in shape.
To ramble on, you mean?
No, ramblonics.
Where is this going? Anyway, we're going to be telling you all the crazy books and films and comic book geeky stuff we've been reading and watching and doing this month. We talk about these things here and there between us, and there's a lot to fill up a show. We waste a lot of time reading the comics that you shouldn't read, so I'm going to be whipping out a few that are pretty terrible and maybe you should skip.
I actually picked up, because I haven't been to the 50 cent or $1 bin for years and years.
Oh, no.
So I picked up, because I thought, you know what I should do? I might do some like themed reviews on like number one issues since we got the DC in September. So I picked up three DC number ones for a dollar each from like the mid-90s, judging by the bad covers alone. So I look forward to reading those and mocking them. Really. Well, I don't want to mock because I feel bad about. So I'll say some good stuff about these books that are probably not very good.
Yeah, I wonder when it's fair to mock because... No, it's fair to mock at any time. Why would you hesitate?
Because I don't like to hurt people's feelings, Maladdin.
This is a dog-eat-dog industry, as Stan Lee would say.
If you want to become our friends, you can join us on Facebook.
Yes, of course.
Because I don't have many.
Yeah, there's an extra sequential site on Facebook. And yes. I've also started a YouTube site where we're just uploading some of our favorite clips from the last 50 or so shows. So if you have a favorite scene, one that made you piss your pants with laughter.
Not much like that, man.
Yes, or raise an eyebrow with incredulity. yep, let us know and we'll chuck it up there. Is that what he does? On his enormous forehead.
Yes, you can check out my blog, which is comicbookjesus.com. Not much new to report there this week, but I will be having doing a full review of the Black Panther motion comic. We'll be up there by the time this podcast goes up. It was pretty good.
Yes, I quite appreciate that one. Music for the show is at purgeaudit.com, and you can email chris@extrasequential.com with your hate mail.
Or love mail. And we are going to do something rather new and exciting for our 50th episode, which is only 4 weeks away.
My gosh. So not prepared.
Tell your friends and point them to Extra Sequential.
Yeah, I think so. All right, folks, it's been fun talking at you for another week.
And thanks for listening, and we'll be talking about stuff next week.
See you, folks.
Bye-bye now.